morning. This is Word Made Flesh, the radio ministry of the Lenawee County Mission. For the next few minutes, you'll hear how God is reaching out to those staying at the mission and how He's reaching out to the greater church community. Now here's Lenawee County Mission's Executive Director, Pastor Stephen Palmer, with this week's Word.
Well, good morning, gentlemen. Welcome to this week's edition of Word Made Flesh. How we doing?
Good.
What was that?
Bueno.
Yes. Let's see, on this, the fourth Sunday of Advent, we want to continue to talk about the focus of Lent. It's our journey toward the cross. And I'm going to kind of rehash a little bit what we've been studying for the past 6, 7, 8 weeks or so. This little journey through the Bible, from Adam and Eve through Revelation, traversing toward a common thread in the tapestry of the narrative that we call the Bible. Recognizing that from Genesis, we're really given a calling, that we're called to be priests and rulers, that Adam and Eve kind of fail at that vocational calling. That following Adam and Eve, God then calls a community. We know them as Israel, to kind of bring them back, to rescue them from their failed identity as priests and rulers. And we know that Israel wrestles and stumbles and kind of falls down as the prophets make visible to us. Out of all that comes this messianic expectation of one to come, and we call that Jesus. And we see in Jesus the fulfillment, the inauguration of the way of the kingdom, and that even in his death and resurrection, we see him establishing a pattern of living within that way of the kingdom, as identifying and establishing what it is to be truly human. And in Jesus we see the king, and kings are rulers. We see in Jesus the priest, he's the high priest. He fulfills the image-bearing call upon humanity and establishes for us what it means to be genuinely human, as Adam and Eve were supposed to be, right? Priests and rulers, right? As priests, we spoke about how we lift to God by glorifying God, worshiping God, praising God, as we look out into creation. So we reflect the glory of creation back to God in glorifying God. That's what makes us a priest. As a ruler, we are stewards. We are caretakers. We have dominion over creation. And so we care for God's creation by allowing God to work through us into creation. Remember all this?
Mm-hmm. Yes, sir.
Okay, they're shaking their head yes. And then we validated that common thread of the tapestry of the narrative, the biblical narrative, by looking at four different letters that Paul wrote. And that Paul validates this as he, moving from his Jewish history, recognizing in this Jewish Messiah a new way of life, a new form of living which human civilization has never seen before. So that's kind of it in a nutshell. Would you agree?
Yeah.
Okay. Any responses to that? Anything out of that 8 weeks of study along that little shortened bullet point curriculum I just highlighted that stood out to you? That really maybe unsettled you a little bit? Maybe enlightened you a little bit? Something that really struck a chord with your spirit, to the point to where it moved you to want to, well, as Paul says, become transformed.
Yeah, I think for me, you know, what we've been talking about the last several weeks makes me feel a new sense of responsibility about how I'm living now and the task at hand. You know, we talk about being priests and rulers over the creation as it is here and now, as opposed to, you know, just putting in my time and behaving until I pass and I get called up to heaven or some other place. You know, the whole concept of, you know, the here and now being the project, and that the time I'm here on earth is a proving ground, you know, to become either and or priests and rulers, to be a leader, I guess, and
or at least a partner, right? And we talk, when we're looking at Paul, Paul refers to us as co-laborers, co-creators, ambassadors, ministers of reconciliation. He has all these titles to speak about our vocation as priests and rulers, as those who are in partnership with God in the project, right? Of fulfilling God's intention for God's creation.
Yeah, it's different than what my vision had always been of life and life the hereafter. Mm-hmm. You know, I was always led to believe that, you know, God's plan for eternity took place someplace other than here on earth.
Yeah, we did spend a significant amount of time re-identifying, right, according to the biblical narrative, what the telos is. And in Greek, telos means goal, what the end, what's the completion of the project. And so, yeah, we could say, well, if the objective, if the goal is to get my Fanny to heaven, that could alter how we see the biblical narrative. If the goal is the fulfillment of God's intention for God's creation, that may be a new perspective for us that could alter our own concept of self. And the hope is here. I mean, we have all beat ourselves up pretty good as drunks and addicts. And most of that's because we're deeply wounded. Some of that's contributed because we have no idea what our purpose is. And so I think when we look at Jesus as establishing the essence of what it is to be truly human, right, that gives us purposefulness while we're here and now. It's great to see, you know, bring a homeless man into Lenawee County Mission, introduce him to Jesus, save his soul, and he's still homeless.
That's not the goal.
Yeah, yeah. You know, it'll be all right. You just got to endure the rest of your life, and then, you know, when you check out of here, you know, that just doesn't resonate with the life, mission, and ministry that we see Jesus implement. Anybody else? Any other?
Yeah, I think the biggest thing that stuck out to me and gave me a lot of hope was the way that Jesus did turn everything upside down, and he brought people from, you know, positions or employment that they probably thought they were going to do the rest of their lives. They thought they were stuck doing certain things, you know, and he brought them out of that to something amazing and filled with hope. And it means a lot for me because I feel like a lot of what I've done in the past, you know, my whole life, just really didn't matter. You know, I mean, it mattered, but it didn't, if that makes any sense. Like, it didn't, none of it, you know, was to advance the kingdom, which he calls us to do right now. So it just gives me a lot of hope and makes me excited about what is in the future and what I'm doing now, I guess. Like,
yeah, and that's where we kind of said, geez, Pete, this, really? We're getting excited about following Jesus? Well, yeah, that should be exciting. So, well, if we really think about it, we looked at, how does being Lent and we're journeying towards the cross, how does the cross and the resurrection really apply to our lives? And we said, well, you know, in Jesus' death and resurrection, he establishes for us a certain pattern of living. And we said that those are three components that include humility. Oh, the second one, suffering love. I'm really excited to suffer love. I'm really excited to practice forgiveness. And so we used, I think on last week program, we talked about, you know, shifting our grip on a golf club and that this can be really awkward. Yeah. Yeah. Getting excited about forgiving people. Yeah, that's a new grip. You know, getting excited about suffering love for the stranger, for the other. That's a new grip. Even practicing humility, seeing myself truthfully, you know, has a new grip. All right, so yeah, getting excited about a new grip. Well, yeah, it can be exciting particularly when we start seeing the ball going straight. Right? When we start, you know, Mother Teresa once says, look, if you want to look for Jesus, stop looking around yourself and look in yourself. Well, on the topic of the cross and the resurrection, I think I want to interject here an addition that complements the pattern of living. So for our Lenten study today, that's kind of what I want to look at. So can I get somebody to read from Paul's letter to the people of Corinth, his second letter, 2 Corinthians chapter 8, verse 9.
For you know the grace of our Lord Jesus Christ, that though he was rich, yet for your sakes he became poor, so that you through his poverty might become rich.
Any thoughts?
And encouraging us to be like Christ.
Okay, if we're going to be like Christ, and it says he was rich, but he became poor so that we could become rich. What's Paul saying here? His generous act.
Well, I mean, you can't be any more rich. I mean, if you're you're the Son of God, you're in heaven, you come to earth, where it's, where it's nothing but suffering, so that we might have that opportunity to be with Him one day for eternity, you know.
But how's that consistent with what I just said about the pattern of living?
He's emptied himself.
Selfish. He's
rich in love.
Yeah.
God's intended creation for us, out of love, to show love towards others and live in love. You know, not being selfish but selfless.
Okay. He empties himself. We get the impression, Paul, saying he intentionally takes on poverty. And let's not think about poverty and riches, it's just strictly an economic sense, okay? Even in this ministry, all right, we can have a homeless man come to Lenawee County Mission, and we can he may be poor in his wardrobe. So we'll practice Matthew 25, and we'll help clothe the naked, all right? He might be hungry. His poverty could be hunger, and we'll practice Matthew 25, and we'll feed them. Fish in Lowe's food pantry. We eat pretty good around here.
Right? Yep.
We'll feed them. But there's other forms of poverty, you know? Maybe he's lonely. How do we approach that poverty? And I think what Paul's talking about, and particularly as we see it, the generous act he's referring to, this generous act isn't just it's a compilation of his life, his ministry, his death, and resurrection. I mean, resurrection, the idea of conquering, we talked about it in the past several weeks, conquering the forces of death. That's a pretty good act. That's very generous. Mm-hmm. Now making it possible for me as a truly human one to participate fully in the force of life, because the forces of death have been conquered. But I think the generous act that Paul's really emphasizing is the cross. And we talk about in the cross, we see suffering love being expressed. We see Jesus speaking down to forgive them, for they know not what they do. Forgiveness is being expressed. We see him humbly practicing humility. Though he could probably call down 10,000 angels, he doesn't. He said he empties himself. He gives himself away, right? Where's the poverty? Paul's referring somewhere here. He doesn't have to do this, but he chooses the route of poverty so that we can become rich. And if we're going to say we're Christ-like, and we're going to say that in the cross and resurrection there's this pattern of life that's established, shouldn't we be following suit? So just think about it. What do you know? I think in here we've all seen the Mel Gibson's video, The Passion of Christ. We've seen various other movies and films, videos that speak of the crucifixion. We're all pretty familiar with it. Where do you see the poverty? The generous act of the cross. For you know the generous act of our Lord Jesus Christ, that though he was rich, yet for your sakes he became poor, so that by his poverty you might become rich. What's his poverty?
Gave up his life.
Yeah. Just think about the story of the cross, the crucifixion. Go ahead.
How much power he had to have surrendered that much power to let mankind do to him what they did to him.
Okay. Yes, he loses life. All right. Where did he get the cross? He didn't have a cross. It was given to him. Where did they get the nails? He didn't have the nails. They gave it to him. Where did he get the crown? He didn't have the crown. They gave it to him. What happens after he's dead? They take away the cross. While he's hanging on the cross, did he have any clothes on? No, it tells us they took his clothes. He died naked. Did he even have any burial clothes? Nope. They gave him some borrowed clothes, some cloths, wrapped him up, maybe some old canvas or something. Did he even have a tomb? No. They put him in a buried tomb, or it was a borrowed tomb. See, the thing is, when we get to the point to where if we're going to embrace the cross, then we need to embrace the poverty that comes with the cross. And why is that? Because it empties us. Right, when we start talking about poverty, and if we're going to be faithful as our roles as priests and rulers, if we are chasing the almighty dollar, we are committing idolatry. If we're chasing power and prestige, we're committing idolatry. And somehow or another, whether it be the wealth, the power, the prestige, the fame, the fortune, whatever you want to talk about, your distorted perception of self, we chase that because it has power over us. Thus, we're not poor. And the reason we see the poverty expressed in the cross is because poverty is really freedom. If we're not going to embrace the impoverishment of Christ that we find in what Paul calls the generous act, we're never free. And if you're not free, you're not rich. You're a slave. All right, gentlemen, thank you for joining us on this week's edition of Word Made Flesh. May God's grace, peace, love, and joy be with you always.
Thank you for listening to Word Made Flesh, the radio ministry of the Lenawee County Mission. We hope you'll join us again next Sunday morning In the meantime, if you'd like to know more about the programs we offer at the Lenawee County Mission, or if you'd like to know about volunteer opportunities we have available, please go to our website at lcmission.org or call us at 265-4019.